Greetings once again, McBurney here, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the weekly worldview, and I am your humble host, Doug McBurney, joined in studio today, a special day, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. Glad to have you aboard. We're going to start. We just jump right into the news. What's going on around here? Anyway, we're coming to you from Denver, Colorado, a mile above all the rest of you people. And looking down upon everything. Except you, of course, our loyal listeners. Glad to have you in the audience. And just glad to be alive, I suppose. Maybe not. Maybe would rather. No, it's good to be alive. It's good to be alive. You know, there are other alternatives for folks like us in the hereafter. But we're down here doing time with all of you. So we might as well try to enjoy ourselves. And we'll start with a rather amusing story out of the City University of New York. One Charles B. Strozer is a professor of history there, and he says that environmental stressors and political violence are connected and have given rise to the Islamic State. That's right, environmental stressors and political violence. He says that glacial melt has contributed to catastrophic weather in Afghanistan, and that potentially strengthened the Taliban, potentially, he says. That strengthened the Taliban. That's the catastrophic glacial melt. And he says a four-year drought has destabilized Syria and carved out a space in which ISIS would thrive. I said a drought. Yes, a drought. I know. California's next. ISIS will be marching through the streets of San Jose. Or what? San Rafael del Mar Vista del...
Death Valley.
Death Valley. That would be a good place for ISIS to be marched through. Frog march him through Death Valley. So this professor at... this, by the way, this is reason number 820 to keep or get your children out of the public university system. It's because they'll run into professors like Charles Strozier who blames the rise of Islamic extremism in part, and potentially, upon climate change. He says, when we fail to get the facts right about greenhouse gas emissions, we may unwittingly enable ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, and other extremist groups to flourish. It's greenhouse gas emissions. Should have known. I should have known it wasn't the absence of a legitimate Christian alternative in the Western world for the youngsters that has given rise to it's not the inability of the Western powers to Christianize that dark and evil part of the world known as the Middle East, which is overrun with a satanic cult, a satanic death cult, hell-bent on kidnapping, extortion, murder, rape, violence. We certainly wouldn't want to replace that with a legitimate Christian alternative, or at least give them an alternative. Well, who knows? Maybe we will. Maybe by some as yet unseen means, we in the West will awaken and do our duty to shine the light of the gospel upon this dark and evil place, this godforsaken hellhole that the Middle East has become, well, especially in Iraq and Syria. Now, meanwhile, while the professor was linking climate change to the rise of the Islamic State, the White House was shocked and surprised by the rise of the Islamic State. That's unusual, because the White House has been talking about climate change incessantly for quite some time, so you'd think they would have seen this coming. But Josh Earnest, the spokesmouth, the latest spokesmouth for the Ho administration, says everybody was surprised at the White House. We were surprised to see the rapid advance of ISIL. We were surprised to see the rapid advance they were able to make from Syria across the Iraqi border and be able to take over all that territory in Iraq. It did come as a surprise, despite the global warming, said Josh Earnest. Well, I made up the global warming part. You'll remember that 60 Minutes interviewed one of the biggest softball interviews in history. I only watched a very short portion of it because I'm not able to maintain consciousness while watching 60 Minutes anymore. I grew up on 60 Minutes. I remember Mike Wallace kicking in the doors with the camera, the guy who was shaking down old ladies and stealing their pensions. I grew up on that stuff. Now, you watch 60 Minutes, you might as well take a sleeping pill. It's all so processed and phony. This interview they did with Barry, well, I don't have to tell you. I doubt you watched it either. But President Obama's comments he made during a CBS 60 Minutes interview were somewhat interesting to me. Here's what Barry said, quote, in response to Jonathan Carl, 60 Minutes mannequin, who was wound up that morning and fed questions to interview Barry with. Jonathan Carl asked a question about, well, did we underestimate ISIS? Nobody knows what to call. You know what proves that the Ho administration lacks any leadership at all? Is they insist on calling the terrorists that call themselves the Islamic State. The Ho administration insists on calling them ISIL, but all the other media calls them ISIS. And if anyone had any respect for the Ho administration's opinion, we would follow his lead and call them whatever he calls them. But nobody cares what the Ho administration thinks because everyone realizes they don't have a clue about anything that's going on in regards to ISIS, ISIL, Islamic State, or whatever they are. But when asked if there was any miscalculations made, Ho said this. He said, quote, I think, our head of the intelligence community, you remember him, right? His name, you remember? James Clapper, I said, yes. He has acknowledged, I think, that they underestimated what had been taking place in Syria, unquote. So Barry, he says, I think they underestimated ISIL, ISIS, ISIS, whatever. He says I think they underestimated. So do you remember on the campaign trail, Barry said, I killed bin Laden. I decimated Al-Qaeda. I put the terrorists on the run. No! You're the one who sets the bar. The hairdo king, the fashions are your fashion.
It's all about me.
You're fabulous.
I'm fabulous.
Our obligatory homage to Barry. and it was all about him in the campaign. I killed bin Laden. I decimated Al-Qaeda. Who put the terrorists on the run? I did. But when it comes to underestimating ISIS, ISIL, IS, Barry says, I think they underestimated I think it was them over there. They misunderestimated. They did. Yeah, it was the intelligence community. They have. I think that under. But of course, he said he later that same night. I think he said he has complete confidence in the intelligence community and like that. Okay, so there we have. The White House is shocked by the rise of the Islamic State. The intelligentsia on the college campuses, at least at the City University of New York, say that they shouldn't have been surprised because global warming's been going on and we should have seen all this coming. And it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. In a similar fashion, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you examine how the Western powers have decided to deal with the threat of Islamic State-related terrorists going there, say from England or France or Germany, and then fighting for the Islamic State. And then once they've had their fill of murder, mayhem, and rape, and satanic whatever rituals, the beheadings, I suppose, once they've had their fill, They may decide to return to Hamburg and to London and to Nice. And so the Western powers have decided that one of the first things they're going to do to deal with this threat of Islamic fighters returning to their native lands is they're going to insist that extremists have to get their posts on Facebook and Twitter approved in advance by the police. This is a report. This is not a joke. I'm not making this up. This is a report from the Telegraph in London, and we find it in the Politics Instead of War file. You know, we have a politics file, we have a war file. And someone famously once said that politics are what we do to avoid war. Politics instead of war. Well, the Western powers aligned against the Islamic State have taken that one step too far, in my opinion. Because when they should be at war with the Islamic State, they've instead decided to engage in politics. So they're going to have Facebook and Twitter. If you come back, let's say you come back from Syria, and you change your blood-soaked clothing, and you toss the dagger that you've used to behead various people, you toss that in the bin there. And I guess you go back to where, I don't know what, you go back to driving your taxi cab or whatever it was you were doing. You just go back on the dole, I think, if you came from Germany, France, or England. And apparently the state is going to somehow find out that you're an extremist, and they're gonna screen your Facebook and Twitter posts. You may be barred from speaking at public events. Yeah. What else? The new extremist disruption orders, and by the way, these are all proposed by the Conservatives in the British Parliament. This is how bad it's gotten in England, is that the Conservatives are completely out of touch with reality. Forget the Liberals. What are they called? The Labour Party. Forget them. Half of them have probably left the Parliament to go fight with ISIS. The Labour Party, forget it. But this is the Conservatives. They say they want to issue these extremist disruption orders. Certain extremists may be banned from broadcasting. They may be banned from protesting in certain places, as well as associating with specific people. The Home Secretary will also introduce banning orders, making it a criminal offense to be a member of a group that spreads or promotes hatred. Yes, this is part of the Conservative government's proposal that we are calling our prevent strategy. It's a prevent strategy to prevent Islamic terrorists from returning, engaging in terrorist activity here in the homeland, you see. Oh, we will also issue certain orders banning the beheading of British citizens in certain places and in front of certain groups. You shall not be allowed to behead. We will issue a certain specific extremism disruption order in that regard. All right. So these extremist disruption orders that the Conservatives have concocted there in Britain, the report says they would apply if a judge is convinced that an individual is carrying out their activities for the purpose of overthrowing democracy. Certainly not. You shall not be allowed to behead another British citizen if your intention is to overthrow democracy. And we will see to it that a judge oversees that, young man. Okay, so that's, I know, it's bizarre. That what they need to do is if you come back through the airport and they think you've been fighting for the Islamic State, you should be arrested, put on trial, and if convicted, you should be executed. That's all. Not monitored. Your Facebook and Twitter posts, you shouldn't be able to Facebook and Twitter because you should be executed. That's all. But instead, the liberals in the Conservative government have decided to try to manage and regulate terrorists, which tells me that they're all just completely, they've lost their minds. Too many years of inbreeding in England. They should have gotten off that island, for crying out loud. All right, now, more serious news. This is from the war file. And I believe we reported that there was the possibility of this happening. Well, it has happened. According to one vicar, or are they, no, it's a vicar. It's a vicar, right? A vicar from the Church of England. One of the last vicars remaining in Iraq. Wait a minute. This is the last Anglican vicar remaining in Iraq, Canon Andrew White. He says, last week marked the first time in millennia that Christians did not receive Holy Communion in Nineveh in northern Iraq. We had been reporting that Christians were fleeing Nineveh province. He reports that all the churches are closed and all their people have run away. He says the few Iraqis remaining fear for their lives constantly. The Islamic State has forced an estimated 200,000 people to flee their homeland in Nineveh province. And they have conquered Mosul, of course. Those Christians who left... Now, listen to this. Do you remember what it was like for a Jew in Germany in, say, 1939? See, a Jew would be allowed to leave Germany. They would be allowed to leave. But there was one catch. They had to surrender to the state everything they owned. Maybe they were allowed to keep the clothes on their back, and they were allowed to keep whatever they could hide, and they were allowed to keep whatever they could bribe governing officials into letting them keep. Well, the Christians who have left Nineveh province were deprived of all their money and all their belongings. And it is believed currently that no Christians remain in the city of Mosul, not a single Christian. They've all fled or been killed, and their property has been confiscated. So the Islamic State is really just the modern incarnation of the Nazis, both led by the same titular head, which I believe is Satan himself. I really believe that, that it is Satan himself who is at the head, who was at the head of the Nazis and is at the head of the Islamic State. Very similar tactics carried out by a very similar organization, eerily reminiscent of what plunged the world into the greatest war we've ever known. And if the West doesn't get their act together and decide that it is time to make war and that it is time to bring Christianity to the Middle East, we may be plunged into an even greater war. We go now from the Middle East back home to the homeland in New York City. A report from Fox News. Ailina Tsarnaeva is a 24-year-old woman who lives in North Bergen, New Jersey. She's been accused of threatening a woman who previously had a romantic relationship with her husband. Yeah. She said she's accused of saying to the woman who allegedly previously had a romantic relationship with her husband. She is accused of saying, leave my man alone. I know people that can put a bomb where you live, she said. And she was arrested for a threat of terrorism. Why was she taken so seriously? Well, she's the sister of Tamerlan Tsarnaev and Johar, the Boston Marathon bombers. So when she threatens to put a bomb in somebody's house, the police take that very seriously. Okay. So my only question is, if she's threatening this woman with a bomb, did this woman previously have a romantic relationship with her husband, or is this woman currently having a romantic relationship with her husband? In which case, that, you know, it could be understood that she might make, she might use inflammatory language. Many people who find out that their husband is cheating might say to the other woman, I'm going to kill you. Mm-hmm. And they might not literally mean it. And then again, they might. As they quite often do, as a matter of fact. Yeah. If you watch these murder shows on TV, these murder mystery shows, I would say 30% of the time it's related to some kind of affair. So it's certainly
30.
More than 30? Half the time, maybe? It's either insurance money or it's an affair. Yeah. It's for love or money, right? Yeah. That most of these people get murdered. So anyway, I don't know why her last name is Tsarnaeva, because the Tamerlan and Johar, their last name was Tsarnaev.
She's
Tsarnaeva. Maybe she married some other guy, or maybe she added a letter because being a Tsarnaev is kind of embarrassing now because of the bombers.
Yeah, but she's married.
Oh, yeah, she is married. So she's married to some guy named Tsarnaeva? What are the odds of that? Who knows? Anyway, just an odd story out of the Domestic Tranquility file about the Tsarnaev brothers' sister, who's still in America and threatening to bomb people who mess around with her husband. Now, and that sentiment, we don't necessarily have a problem with that, at least expressing extreme anger and jealousy over the fact that somebody is trying to seduce your spouse. That's certainly understandable. But how is it that this woman hasn't been deported? I don't get it. Anyway, so in my opinion, if somebody bombs something, you have to deport, arrest, or execute virtually their entire family and their entire circle of friends. I'm sorry, if they're Islamic. I mean, maybe that's me. Call me a racist, but I would be serious about prosecuting a war against terrorists. And I certainly wouldn't let them or anyone they may influence or have any association with stay in this country, at least not above ground. They might be allowed to stay, but, you know, they'd be 6 feet under. You know, we'd make accommodations. But otherwise, you've got to leave. I'm sorry. All right. So, Ilina Tsarnaeva, she's upset. Maybe we should send her to Sweden. According to the French press agency, Sweden has a new social democrat prime minister named Stefan. And Stefan says, quote, Sweden's new government is a feminist government, says Prime Minister Stefan. He's leading a coalition of the Social Democrats and the Green Party. And they're planning a national mass suicide. That's going to, at his inauguration, they're going to have a mass suicide where everyone in Sweden is just going to kill themselves and just get it over with. Just save us all some time. Yes, the Greens have aligned with the Social Democrats under Prime Minister Stefan. Well, it's actually pretty sad. He goes on to talk about how he is going to reestablish socialist utopian goals. He says the hunt for profits will be stopped. He says, "All right, well, okay." So all of you liberals who complain about Christians and Americans and American ideals, like all the kids that were lining the street here in Colorado, I had to drive up Wadsworth Boulevard here in the Denver metro area, out in Jefferson County, the other, this would have been Friday afternoon. Had to drive up there, and the whole way, every street corner was packed with teenage kids, high school kids, with their moronic, idiotic signs saying we want to keep our history. And so George Soros and all them have the kids out here stirred up against an alleged conservative. Do I have this story in here? I don't even know if I have this story in here. I doubt I was even going to report on this story. But out here in Colorado, there's a school board that's been taken over by so-called conservatives. Yeah. And they say they want to change the history curriculum to reflect more positive, a more positive view of America in the world. And so the teachers, of course, are outraged number one, at the idea that they'd be given any work to do. They don't want to do any work. They're very comfortable teaching their socialist, communist garbage that they shovel to these kids. And they're very busy trying to molest and seduce them. So they've hardly got time to come up with new ideas for curriculum. And so they've organized the kids to all protest and stand out there. And some of these kids, they have signs that you can read the signs, and it's like, stand up for kids with an arrow. Stand arrow, the number four, kids. It's like, well, I'm not sure what you're trying to say, son, you know, but whatever. Anyway, so it's obviously all organized by the socialist, communist, humanist scum teachers and the teachers' union and the administrators and all of that. And they should all just move to Sweden and join the new feminist government there. And they can sneer at America and America's influence on the world. And they can all seduce and molest one another and exchange various venereal diseases and just get out of Jefferson County and leave us alone. All right. Now, of course, I wish that they would repent and actually come to a more workable knowledge of the world, the universe, life, religion, history, and all that. But I'm kind of fed up, and there was a traffic jam, too, and that was annoying. Nobody wants that. Not over such a stupid and silly argument. And by the way, for you alleged conservatives who've taken over the school board in Jefferson County, that's an oxymoron. You cannot be a conservative and be on a public school board. I'm sorry. The two are mutually exclusive. If you were a conservative, you wouldn't be involved with the government schools. It would be like a circus act. You know, you'd see it there on the street corner. You'd be like, look at the clowns in the circus. And then you'd go home where things are normal and actually conservative. But you wouldn't participate in that circus. That would be ridiculous. All right. Now, from the culture of death file, Breitbart has a story about assisted suicide in the Netherlands. The Netherlands? Wait a second. Sweden's been taken over by the Greens and the Social Democrats. Prime Minister Stefan says he has a new feminist government. And now we go to Netherlands. The Netherlands is there, right there with Sweden, right? Aren't they all Scandinavian and some?
Yeah.
Something like that. Well, apparently deaths from euthanasia in the Netherlands, formerly known as Holland, where the Dutch live, try to explain that. Have no idea how all that worked out. Deaths from euthanasia in the Netherlands has risen by 151% in just 7 years. That figure does not include what they call terminal sedation over there. Terminal sedation is where the patient is sedated and then has food and fluids withdrawn. Well, that sounds like murder, as a matter of fact. Well, Breitbart reports that if the terminal sedations were included in the data, euthanasia would account for 1 in 8 deaths in the Netherlands over the past few years. Dr. Peter Saunders of the Christian Medical Fellowship says that this proves that assisted dying is impossible to regulate. Assisted suicide, he says, is impossible to regulate. Well, I would have to agree with that. You simply can't, because assisted suicide is just another, it's a euphemism for murder. It's murdering people. And once you get people murdering other people, it's really hard to regulate it. Because when somebody's busy murdering people, it's really hard to tell them to follow the rules. Because, well, they're murdering people. So it's hard to enforce rules around how to murder properly. So Dr. Saunders at the Christian Medical Fellowship is exactly right. You cannot regulate murder. Which lands us in the personhood file, where I've been parrying and thrusting all week in a bit of verbal sword play online.
Jousting?
Not quite jousting, but something like that. You know, at the end of the news stories, they have the comments, the discuss area. And I've jumped in there because the folks at Personhood asked early on in the campaign if some of us who were more verbose than others would keep up with the with the commentaries, the news reports, as well as the opinion pieces online, and just post our comments. And so I've been doing that and been going up all week. I've been going up against pro-aborts and abortion regulators, and they all hate me. The pro-aborts hate me, and the so-called pro-life abortion regulators, they hate me too. They all hate me, and they can't figure out where I'm coming from. Because I say, number one, murder should be illegal. So the pro-aborts hate that. And I tell the regulators, you can't regulate murder. And then I make them feel bad because they've been regulating murder, and they probably didn't realize it. So they realize it when I debate with them, and they get quite upset. And, well, I hope I'm doing some good. But I think we all need to realize that we can't. You're not to regulate murder, rape, theft. You can't regulate those things. They have to be illegal. I mean, it's obvious to me on its face. But when you've spent a lifetime regulating murder, you probably get to a point where you don't realize how gross and disgusting and vile and wicked and evil what you're doing is, and how counterproductive it is to the overall pro-life movement. Back to the assisted suicide story in the Netherlands. In Britain, Breitbart reports, a bill that would legalize assisted dying has received its second reading in the House of Lords. The House of Lords, not to be confused with the actual Lord. This is the House of Lords, which is not full of anyone who knows anything about the Lord, because they're actually giving a second reading to a bill that would legalize murder. More murder in this case. A different style of murder. Different way to murder. And they're going to have their second reading they received a second reading in July. And they're going to continue to study the issue in the next legislative stage, at the end of which, I imagine, they will join Prime Minister Stefan in a mass European suicide. Doug McBurney, this is the Weekly Worldview. We're so glad to have you aboard as we round second and tee it up to move into the second half of the broadcast. A new report from the Centers for Disease Control finds that homos make up only 2% of the U.S. population. Did you know that? Then how come they make up 40% of the HGTV house hunters? Can someone answer that, please? I mean, it's ridiculous. Anyway, CDC says, well, they call them gay men, but homosexual men make up only 2% of the U.S. population, but they constitute over half of the cases of HIV in America. Over half. Yes. And over 60% of those recently infected are homo men. Yeah, I can't read all the details because it's really disgusting how detailed this report is. Yeah. Anyway, they get into specifically how they transmit it. I mean, it's just disgusting. I like the way the Bible does it. The Bible just says that they burn in lust for one another and they receive within their bodies the due consequences of their sin. Or words to that effect. It doesn't get into the specifics of, well, anyway, you don't want to know, believe me. But a surprising line from this report, I was surprised to see, in a report from the Centers for Disease Control. By the way, how can you have centers for disease control? Isn't the center, by definition, one thing? Shouldn't it be the center for... I don't understand that. That's like a... It's one of the best centers. Anyway, if you have the center of something, it should be one center, right? It's the middle. It's the center. But anyways, they have the centers probably because there are a number of overlapping bureaucracies, duplicate bureaucracies all melded into one, and nobody wanted to lay off their brother-in-law. So they just called it, we'll just say it's the Centers for Disease Control. Anyway, a bunch of humanist socialist scum, paper pushers, virtually useless. 95% of the Centers for Disease Control could be wiped out by Ebola, and it wouldn't affect our ability to fight the Ebola virus, in my opinion. A lot of people's nephews, cousins, mistresses, you know, would be tragic. But we just don't need them all. I'm sorry. We don't need centers for disease control. I think we could do with just one center. But anyway, they say in their report that one of the reasons for the higher infection rate of HIV among homos is promiscuity. Oh, they actually use the word promiscuity, which I thought had been purged from the vernacular decades ago. I thought they changed it to sexually active. But apparently there's someone from the old school working at the CDC, and he happened to notice that the reason all these homos are getting infected with AIDS is because they're promiscuous. That'll probably be redacted in the second edition. You won't be able to find this line, so you should make a copy of this now. I think that's all I have on this story. Just shocking to me that, number one, that homos are only, that they admit, the Centers for Disease Control admits that homos are only 2% of the population. That's interesting. And they use the word promiscuity. So there's whoever wrote that part of the report, they should be kept on at the CDC. They should probably be put in charge when all the rest of them are purged out. All right, now, good news from the Justice File. From the See the System Work file, pedophile Mitchell Harrison over in Britain was butchered by two fellow inmates who cut out his stomach. Now, he's a 23-year-old convicted child rapist, was apparently held down and tortured by two inmates who are said to have covered his mouth and ignored his screams for mercy as they disemboweled him with a homemade knife. Yeah. The two men who allegedly killed him, it's alleged because, well, they had his entrails all over them. And they also said that they were glad they killed him. So it's alleged that they did it. They said they targeted the child rapist Mitchell Harrison because of his history of sex offenses. So here's a couple of, who knows, thieves, robbers. Well, now they're murderers.
Maybe they are.
Yeah. They may have already been murderers. It doesn't really go into that.
But they are not child molesters.
But they are not child molesters.
So that's the standard now.
Yeah.
Low.
Yes, the standard is very low. These two guys are considered better people than him anyways. Yeah. Okay. So they disemboweled him. They have been charged with murder, allegedly. Well, I don't want to get into what this guy did because, wow. This was a bad guy convicted of his first assault of a 7-year-old when he was 13. Again at 15. And anyway, here's someone who should have been executed at the age of 13.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't. Because why? Because the British justice system is so nice that they don't give the death penalty, so they say. But he got the death penalty, and he was disemboweled with a homemade makeshift knife. Yeah, I think that's what you would, yeah, disembowelment with a homemade makeshift knife. The hammer fell on pedophile Mitchell Harrison, who, despite the best efforts of the British justice system, did indeed receive the death penalty. Thank you very much. That's from the See the System Work file. All right. Now, we come back across the pond to America and to reason number 819, to keep or get your children out of the government schools. According to WorldNet Daily, students across America whose schools take part in LGBT History Month. What? Which schools? Well, your school. If your kid goes to government school, your school takes part in LGBT History Month. How do I know this? Because all the schools in Texas do it. And I can assure you, if all the schools in Texas have been sodomized, your school's been sodomized as well. You wonder, why? Which school? Well, it's your school. Let's see. The schools that are going to take part in LGBT History Month, by the way, that's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. Is there anyone I missed? History Month. We'll soon be hearing praise for a woman named Cece McDonald. She's going to be included as, what do they call these people? They have a certain number of groups. Oh, they pick 31 icons of the LGBT community. Icons, yes. And this year, Cece McDonald is one of those icons. Now, Cece is represented in LGBT History Month as an icon, as a prison reformer who brought attention to the plight of transgendered inmates in prison. Which begs the question, why was CC in prison? Well, she was accused of second-degree murder. Now, she did accept a plea bargain of second-degree manslaughter. She fatally stabbed a man to death with scissors and admits that she did it. And she is now an LGBT icon for all your kids in your school. Brad Dacus, the president of Pacific Justice Institute, is calling on parents to pay attention to their public schools throughout October to see what is being taught as part of LGBT History Month. Brad, please. I can understand Brad saying that, but I think, Brad, you should only say that after you say, get your kids out of the government schools. Get them out before October starts. It's LGBT History Month, for crying out loud. And then you could say, all right, now if you're going to keep them in, just please pay attention to what they're being taught. Anyway, we appreciate Brad Dacus. He's a good guy. Let's see. I think I have another. I have two or three conservatives in this story. I don't have time to get to them all. But they all say how horrible and terrible this is. But none of them say, get your kids out of the government schools. Which is what parents need to hear, and they need to hear it over and over. You know, I suppose drawing the attention of parents toward this type of perversion that's being taught in the schools, I suppose that's helpful. So I'm thankful to Brad for doing this. Some of the other icons, by the way, this year for LGBT History Month, Margaret Cho. Have you ever seen Margaret Cho? This is a foul-mouthed comedian, one of the foulest-mouthed, vilest comedians you've ever heard in your life. And she says things in her stage act that would make a sailor blush, and she's going to be featured as an icon in your kid's school. Lord Byron, Billie Holiday, Freddie Mercury, and Glenn Greenwald, the man who helped with the greatest leak of government classified information in the history of America, Glenn Greenwald. He helped. Who's that little pasty-faced queer who leaked all that data for Snowden. WikiLeaks?
Snowden.
I'm sorry, I had a blank there. Glenn Greenwald, who helped Ed Snowden leak all this classified information, probably got Americans killed, or friends of America, probably got them killed, undermined our intelligence apparatus for a decade, perhaps. He's going to be held up as an icon to your kids in your kids' government school. Think about that. Margaret Cho. Freddie Mercury, for crying out loud. You want your kids learning how great Freddie Mercury was? A coked-up homo who got himself AIDS because he couldn't control himself in the bathhouses of Greenwich Village in London, for crying out loud? Is that what you want your kids to learn? LGBT month is promoted with posters without advance notice to parents.
And this LGBT History Month has become so ensconced in the government schools. If you people aren't paying attention to what your kids are learning in the government schools, you'll be shocked when you find out. It's become so ensconced that even Republicans. Well, listen to this. In 2011, New Jersey Republican Governor Chris Christie suggested a teacher should be fired because she criticized LGBT History Month on her Facebook page. So the Republican governor of New Jersey stood up and said, "Oh, you're not wearing the ribbon? You're not wearing the ribbon? You should be fired." That's Chris Christie, for crying out loud, saying that a teacher should be fired for saying she didn't like LGBT History Month on her Facebook page. That's how powerful this stuff is. Well, by the way, Pacific Justice is upset that LGBT History Month is promoted without advance notice to parents, as if telling the parents in advance would be any better. If the parents knew in advance and let their kids go to this thing, well, it's twice as bad. It's probably twice as bad as I think. Get your kids out of the government schools. If there's any way possible, please get your kids out. It's a cesspool of wickedness and corruption, and your children will be defiled, deflowered, and molested in the government schools. Get them out.
Doug McBurney here, and we're jump right back in with the government schools. We go to reason number 818 to get your children out of the government schools. A University of Washington biology professor is bragging that he works every day to destroy faith in his classes. Yeah, he insists to his students that science and religion are incompatible. This is University of Washington biology professor David Barish. It says he works every day to destroy faith. He says, before Darwin, one could believe that human beings were distinct from other life forms. But no more, he says. Obviously not being familiar with the work in the field of genetics and all kinds of things. Anyway, the fact that he can assert that there's no difference between humans and other forms of life proves that he's distinct from other forms of life, because no other form of life can assert that. Do you get it? The fact that he can state his opinion proves that he is distinct and unique in the wild kingdom, so to speak. Listen to this. He says, no literally supernatural trait has ever been found in Homo sapiens. We are perfectly good animals, indistinguishable from the rest of the living world at the level of structure as well as physiological mechanism. At which point, the alligator with whom he was talking said, wait a minute, I think there are physiological differences as well as psychological differences. But the alligator was unable to finish his thought because just then Dr. Barish was tapped on the shoulder by an E. coli bacteria who'd been overhearing the conversation and insisted on giving his opinion, but they were all interrupted by the unicorn that came into the room and wanted to join the discussion. And it was a free-for-all after that. Professor Barish couldn't get a word in edgewise at that point. So he says there's nothing that distinguishes us. No literally supernatural trait has ever been found in Homo sapiens, he says. Anyway, the author here, this is from National Review. I didn't write the author's name down. I probably should have done that, but you can find it in National Review. The author says people like Professor Barish always invoke aspects of our intrinsic uniqueness that they huff and puff to deny. He says the New York Times carries the same issue of the New York Times
carried another column about how we are supposedly responsible for mass extinction and what we can do to save endangered species. One question, asks the author, if we are not exceptional, how could we cause such a thing? And moreover, why should we care? You know, isn't that funny how the liberals insist that we're nothing, we're just a speck and we're nothing, but we should all feel guilty about destroying the planet? They're just obviously mentally ill. Anyway, a well-written article there at National Review. I wish I had time to read the whole thing, but I will link to it on the blog so that you can check it out if you want to. We move now to the science, really, file. Yes, from the Associated Press in London. A woman in Sweden has given birth after receiving a womb transplant. This is awesome. Some experts had questioned whether a transplanted womb would be able to nourish a fetus. Well, this Swedish woman has given birth and proven that indeed it can, and it has. The other scientists had questioned whether such an extreme step, so fraught with medical risks, would even be a realistic option for many women. And so for the first time, doctors have transplanted a womb and a child has been carried to live birth. Doctors transplanted wombs into 9 women over the last 2 years as part of a study. Complications forced removal of 2 of the organs. And there are 2 other pregnancies that are at least 25 weeks along. Very encouraging. And this goes to one of the things I've said about personhood for a long time is that when personhood is reestablished and the uniqueness and the sacred nature of the human life in utero is once again recognized, that the medical advances that will be possible in the fields of neonatology are just fantastical to think about. And it's encouraging to see that there are some doctors and medical organizations who are actually focused on ways of producing life rather than ways of extinguishing and preventing life. Now, I wonder how this is going to go over with Prime Minister Stefan over in the new feminist Swedish government, a womb transplant. My goodness. One thing feminists hate is the womb. They absolutely... It's strange that most feminists have a womb and they seem to hate it so much. Now, Prime Minister Stefan there in Sweden, I don't think he has a womb. If it's a he, it could be transgendered. You never know these days. It could have been Stephanie before the election, and now it's Stefan. Who knows? And who are we to judge if he, she, it is, whatever, right? Anyway, very encouraging stories. 2 other pregnancies at least 25 weeks along. A womb transplant. Very, very cool. All right. Now, we go from the science file. Now, this is, I'm not sure how to take this story, but I had to, for the sheer sake of irony, I had to include this story. This is out of Cleveland from the Associated Press. An Ohio woman is suing a Chicago area sperm bank after she became pregnant with sperm donated by a black man instead of a white man, as she and her partner had intended. So you get the idea right from the beginning. Uh-oh. Partner? Okay. Sperm bank? Yeah. Anyway, Jennifer and Amanda became pregnant. Just the way they report these things is unbelievable. Jennifer and Amanda became pregnant with the donor sperm. 5 months into the pregnancy, Jennifer or Amanda, they both weren't pregnant, but, you know, the writers of the story, they want to honor homosexual unions. And so in the same way that you or I might say, oh, yeah, Jason and Rachel are pregnant. So in the same way, the AP says Jennifer and Amanda are pregnant. Well, not in the same way, really. In fact, it's like a total opposite, different way. But you know what I'm saying. 5 months into the pregnancy, she called the sperm bank to reserve some more sperm from the same donor. And that's when the sperm bank realized that there had been a mistake. They had inseminated her with the sperm from a black donor. And so now the lesbians have filed a lawsuit against the sperm bank. But they insist that they love their 2-year-old daughter and wouldn't change anything about her. Don't say that in court. Don't, yeah. We're not going to say that in court because in court we're going to say, well, we wanted a white kid, but we got a black kid and we want $150,000 or whatever they want, right? This is a great way to permanently damage the psyche of your child, drag her into court and say, this isn't what we ordered, damn it. Give us a white kid. Or give us $150,000. Disgusting. And that's all I've got on that. It's just disgusting, and that's all there is to it. With a lot of stories these days, there is no greater lesson to be learned. It's just that the world is overflowing with narcissistic, self-absorbed lesbians who hire lawyers and are ruining everything. That's pretty much it. Speaking of ruining everything, from the domestic tranquility file, an 80-year-old Applebee's patron was annoyed when she heard young Mikey Sawyer swearing, speaking loud obscenities, and talking about the female anatomy and using various profanities at an Applebee's restaurant. So, the 80-year-old, do they have the person's name here? Harry Sander, 80-year-old Harry, goes over to the young punk and asks him politely to stop cursing. So the 26-year-old punk responded by punching the 80-year-old man in the face. Yeah, this guy ends up in the hospital. His left eye was red. His left cheek was discolored and bruised. And the young man has been arrested. He's been charged with the felony of battering a person over age 65. He should be arrested for attempted murder because you punch an 80-year-old in the head and you very well may kill them. And I think the 80-year-old should be allowed to administer the punishment to Mikey. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't ask Mikey. Because, Harry beat him to death with a baseball bat. Because Mikey will say anything. Anyway. That's just a story of... It kind of makes you wonder what's happened to the country. How does a 26-year-old man think he can punch? How is he motivated to punch an 80-year-old for correcting him? I can remember when I was in my early 20s. I was a loudmouth punk. And if an 80-year-old had come up to me in a restaurant and I was surrounded by all my big, tough, loudmouth friends, and he had corrected me for cursing, I would have gone red in the face and probably gone to the bathroom just to get out of the glare of it all. I'd have been embarrassed. I certainly wouldn't have punched an 80-year-old man for crying out loud. Anyway, well, I hope I wouldn't have. I mean, I was a pretty bad guy. But I don't think I would have done that. Anyway, but these kids today, I mean, apparently a generation or two later, and we're in a whole different place. Because I was one of the worst punks you could ever encounter. And there's no way I'd have done that. And I can't imagine any of my friends except one who I think would have done that. There's one who I won't mention his name, but I think he may have been the devil incarnate. Delivered. He was bad. I had to find out if he's still alive. That's the cool thing about Facebook, is you can go and find out if people are still alive.
Hey, I don't do it, so...
You don't do Facebook? No, everyone's going to assume you've passed away. My extremely attractive audio engineer has never logged on to Facebook. She doesn't have an account. Doesn't even know how to spell Facebook. On purpose. Anyway, so everyone who grew up with her, they think she died 20 years ago. Let's see, we have a couple more stories. Oh boy, we're running out of time, actually. I've got a story from the Domestic Tranquility file. There's a nightclub in Miami called The Spot, and gunfire erupted last Sunday morning, injuring more than a dozen people. 15 people were shot. Now, this is a nightclub. And 15 people were shot. The youngest was 11 years old. And a 15-year-old remains in critical condition. Or it did at the time of this report. And I have a post here. This is a social media post from the Miami-Dade School Superintendent, Alberto Carvalho. He says he was furious to hear about the incident. He tweeted out, quote, "Can anyone tell me what in the world were young teens doing at a club that serves alcohol at 2 a.m.? Parents, please." unquote. He said that on, that's the superintendent of Miami-Dade schools. He's probably got glow sticks and pacifiers hidden under his bed. He's teaching kids every day that there is no God, that there is no absolute right or wrong, that they evolved from slime, that evolution tells us that the strong survive. Have sex with anyone you want. Just make sure you wear protection. And then he calls for the pig, calls the parents out because he got kids out clubbing at 2 in the morning?
You know what?
You what?
Because the gun erupts.
Oh, the gun erupted, yeah. Of course. Gunfire erupted. Yeah, there was a couple of guns in the club, and they just started going off. Unbelievable. That's why kids shouldn't go, right, because guns might erupt. So that's that. Finally, we have a report from, who's this, from Philly.com out in Philadelphia. Authorities have revealed there that an elaborate sting operation was set up to take down a corrupt judge in Philadelphia. What? A corrupt judge in Philly? No! Anyway, a gun arrest was staged. Criminal charges were all set up to test whether a municipal judge could be induced to influence the case. Well, turns out, yes, he could. And yes, he did. And now the judge has pled guilty last week to federal fraud charges. And he tried to get the guy off. Philly.com reports that while federal authorities have in the past staged prosecutions to root out corruption, it's relatively rare as the technique raises complex ethical quandaries about tampering with the legal system. I don't think that's really why it's so rare. I think it's really so rare because it could put almost every judge on the bench in prison and every lawyer and everyone involved. And there's a few good prosecutors, I'm sure, but they're few and far between. That's all we've got from the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, and as always, my other brother Darryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, I'll return next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.